Today's episode is brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Governor Kate Brown on Friday defended her decision to prioritize the state's limited supply of COVID-19 vaccinations for educators over senior citizens who are known to be the most vulnerable population to serious complications and death from the coronavirus. At a press conference with Oregon health and education officials, Brown underscored the long-term mental health and social, emotional, and academic impacts the nearly year-long absence from the classroom was having on Oregon students and families. A recent study showed that if schools remain remote, the potential educational loss could be substantial, Brown said. This is especially true in mathematics, with students likely to lose 5 to 9 months on average of learning by the end of this school year. The governor said she has prioritized protecting seniors since the pandemic began, which has resulted in Oregon faring better than most other states in terms of protecting this most vulnerable group. Oregon is the second lowest COVID-19 infection rate among seniors in the country and the third lowest death rate among people 65 and older, she said. Just this last week, she completed first dose vaccinations for all seniors living in nursing homes who wanted the vaccine. Brown had previously announced that both teachers and seniors 65 and older could begin receiving the vaccine on January 23rd. However, when a Federal Reserve of vaccination doses that Oregon officials had been counting on turned out to be non-existent, the state had to change gears. I first made the commitment at the end of the year to vaccinate Oregon's educators and school staff, and I reaffirmed that commitment last week, Brown said Friday. Educators can be vaccinated quickly, district by district. This choice represents a rapid action that will have an outsized impact on Oregon kids. If we were to vaccinate every Oregon senior first, the harsh reality is that many of our educators would not get vaccinated this school year, and the Oregon kids would continue to suffer. Starting with teachers pushes the vaccine schedule for seniors out only 2 weeks, Brown said, though this isn't exactly true. It is only Oregonians 80 and older who will become eligible for the immunization on February 8th, with other senior age groups staggered over the next several more weeks. The harsh reality is we are managing a scarce resource right now, Brown said. Time and time again, this pandemic has forced difficult choices, and even in tough times, I continue to be inspired by the extraordinary ways Oregonians lift one another up and work together. Clackamas County Republican officials have selected three candidates to replace former State Senator Alan Olson from Canby, who announced his midterm resignation earlier this month. Steve Bates and John Lee from Boring, and former State Representative Bill Kennemer, who's also from Canby. Olson, who was first elected in 2011, cited family reasons for his motivation for stepping down and plans to move out of state. Steve Bates is a longtime Boring community leader and the former chair of the Boring Community Planning Organization, founder of the Boring Oregon Foundation, chief sponsor of the annual Boring and Dull Day, and president of the Oregon Vietnam War Memorial Fund. He is the founder of Oregon Fire Equipment Company and Stephen L. Bates Enterprises. He had previously worked with Senator Olson on several projects, and he said he has developed relationships at the Capitol by virtue of his advocacy as a citizen leader, including requesting 17 bills that have been introduced for consideration. The only candidate with previous experience as a member of the state legislature, Bill Kennemer, retired in 2018 after nearly 10 years representing House District 39, a seat now represented by House Minority Leader Christine Drazen. Kennemer had previously served two terms as a state senator, representing what was then District 12, and a Clackamas County Commissioner. His professional experience includes working as a licensed psychologist from 1975 to 1997. John Lee, a longtime leader in the Clackamas County Republican Party, was one of the candidates seeking to replace Kennemer in the House back in 2018. He finished second in the Republican primary that year to the ultimately victorious Christine Drazen. He has also served as treasurer of the Oregon GOP and worked in various roles providing sales strategy consulting for small businesses. He has also been active in the Boring Community Planning Organization. The three finalist names will now be forwarded onto the county commissioners for Clackamas and Multnomah counties, who will make the final determination as to who serves the remaining 2 years of Olson's term. The Clackamas County Board of Commissioners has not announced when it will consider the nominees, but an appointment must be made within 30 days of Olson's resignation, which is effective January 10th. Despite the very real mental health impacts of the coronavirus pandemic and associated lockdowns, Clackamas County, fortunately, has not seen an increase in the number of suicides since March 2020. The information came from Clackamas County Prevention Coordinator Golly Murray during a recent interview with the Canby Current. There are people who have said, you know, we've had as many suicides as we've had COVID deaths, Murray said. There's lots of misinformation out there, but it's very important for people to know that the rate of suicide has not gone up as a result of this pandemic. Overall, the rate of suicide in Clackamas County and across the state had been trending upward before the pandemic, and those trends have continued, Murray confirmed. What has not been seen is an even greater increase in the number of suicides, or what some might describe as an epidemic with the pandemic, that could be linked to economic depression, isolation, and other factors stemming from coronavirus restrictions. The most recent data from the Oregon Health Authority actually shows a markedly lower number of suicide deaths statewide in 2020 compared to 2019, though the report noted mortality data is still being processed and the numbers of the most recent months are still subject to change. I think people are wanting to connect death from suicide and the pandemic, and that's not accurate, Murray said. Please know that people are dying. It's not that people are not dying, and one death is way too many. But at this point, there is no direct connection. That is not to say that the pandemic has been in any way helpful to the mental health of Clackamas Countyans, Murray stressed. The county's behavioral health and mental wellness clinics have been open throughout this pandemic, and they have been providing critical services remotely and in person. People are really struggling, she said. We're seeing depression, we're seeing anxiety, we're seeing thoughts of suicide, we're hearing stories of people losing their jobs, people getting sick, people getting COVID, people dying from COVID. We're hearing those stories regularly, and we're trying to support people. If you're not feeling okay, or you need support for yourself or a loved one, call the confidential 24/7 Clackamas County Crisis Line, 503-655-8585. That's 503-655-8585. Or just text HOME, H-O-M-E, to 741-741. A longtime Canby swim coach has received the prestigious Excellence in Coaching Award from Oregon Swimming Incorporated. The statewide swimming association typically hands out awards for excellence in athletics and coaching at the end of the year, which are voted on by the Oregon Coaches Committee. Canby Swim Center Aquatic Program Manager Eric Lattenden said Canby Swim Club coach Nathan Templeman was this year's selection for excellence in coaching. Nathan Templeman has been in aquatics for 30 years, Lattenden said. He has always strived for excellence and professionalism in swimming. His swimmers have swum on every level, and many have continued to swim at the collegiate level. Under Templeman's guidance, the Canby Gators organization continues to move up in the recognition among other clubs and programs, Lattenden added. Everyone knows this past year has been difficult for everyone, Lattenden said. Nathan has continued to look for places for his swimmers to continue to train as his home pool closed due to COVID regulations. He has been able to keep many of his swimmers training while continuing to follow all state, local, and U.S. swimming regulations. Indeed, the beloved city pool closed in March when the pandemic first hit Oregon and has remained so for most of the past year. It reopened briefly in September under strict guidelines before closing again late last year following the new surge in coronavirus cases statewide. Nathan truly gives all of himself, provide great coaching to his swimmers, Lattenden said. In a Facebook post, Templeman remembered the night he was ambushed after practice by Lattenden and Gators team president Kristen Moll. I want to be absolutely clear, the coach said. This award is really for all Gators, swimmers, coaches, and families, past and present, without whom I'm just a grumpy old guy with twitchy stopwatch fingers. Templeman said the Gators team and his personal coaching philosophy are based on several core values: confidence, fun, goal setting, grit, respect, and teamwork. We actively promote them all, but those who know me well attest that I'm partial to grit, he said. Its relentless pursuit has shaped every generation of athletes that I have had the pleasure to coach. Clearly, few times have offered more opportunities to hone this particular value, and it is strangely appropriate that I receive this award in the rain on the desk of a makeshift pool surrounded by kids fighting to get better. Police beat for the weeks of November 17th all the way through November 30th. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. On November 17th at 1 p.m., a commercial vehicle hit and damaged a city-owned mailbox. It's the biggest thing that happened all day. On November 18th at 5:30 p.m., a wallet was reported stolen from a grocery cart and later located and turned into store personnel. On November 19th at 8:40 a.m., a driver was stopped for texting while driving and subsequently arrested on an outstanding Marion County warrant. That's fun. Don't text and drive, and also don't have a warrant out for your arrest. That person just doesn't get it, I guess. At 4:30 p.m., response to a hit-and-run traffic crash, video surveillance was obtained by officers, and the suspect was located. On November 20th at 11:33 a.m., response to a report of a person attempting to make fraudulent returns at a variety of stores. At 12:35 p.m., response to a person yelling. That's the whole sentence. The response to a person yelling and then followed up. The individual was located and cited and released on an unrelated outstanding Clackamas County warrant. So remember, at 12:35 p.m., don't go yelling if you have a warrant out. I mean, at 4:45 p.m., a motorcyclist attempting to elude police was taken into custody after he failed to negotiate a corner. and collided with the tree. He wasn't injured, says that here, but man, that's got to be embarrassing. On November 21st at 1:21 a.m., a driver was arrested for an outstanding warrant and for possession of a controlled substance. At 10:41 a.m., report of a hit and run damage to a parked vehicle. Good old parked vehicles getting hit everywhere in this town. At 3 p.m., following a traffic stop, two individuals were arrested for aggravated identity theft, theft of mail, and possession of a controlled substance. What's aggravated identity theft? Like, I don't know what that is. That's interesting. On November 23rd at 8:56 p.m., a driver of an uninsured vehicle was arrested on an outstanding warrant for failing to register as a sex offender and for possession of methamphetamine. The good old turkey of breaking the law. All three of those are terrible. On November 24th at 9:13 a.m., report of fake currency being passed at a convenience store. At 10:05 a.m., report of a vehicle being stolen from a residential driveway, just right out of that person's driveway. On November 25th at 9:06 p.m., a suspended driver operating an uninsured vehicle, an unregistered vehicle, was arrested for possession of methamphetamine and heroin. He had to get to the dinner at some point, right? Like, he's trying to get that turkey. Don't stop him. Even if he does have, if he has drugs, you should stop him for sure. At 1:22 p.m., report of fraud after a victim paid money to a person posing online as a dog breeder. At 11:18 p.m., an uninsured vehicle was impounded and the suspended driver was cited. On November 27th at 11:08 a.m., response to a theft in progress. The suspect was located and arrested on multiple outstanding warrants for theft and for possession of methamphetamine. Because everybody knows, if you're going to go start stealing stuff from people, you should just carry your meth with you so that it doesn't get stolen. At 10:20 p.m., an uninsured vehicle with expired registration was stopped. The driver was arrested for DUI, controlled substance, and a passenger was arrested for an outstanding parole violation warrant and for possession of heroin and methamphetamine. Because don't leave your drugs behind. Take them with you when you're driving illegal cars. November 28th at 11:39 a.m., report of vandalism to a community library box. This actually sucks. I'm just going to take a quick second. That sucks. Don't mess with people's community library boxes. They're just there for people to put books in. Read books. I love books. You should love books. Don't break library boxes. On November 29th at 12:31, response to a report of an individual displaying unusual behavior in a city park. The suspect, who was under the influence of an intoxicant, was arrested on an outstanding Clackamas County warrant. Why are you going to go out and do weird things if you don't want to be caught? On November 30th at 7:15 a.m., an unattended vehicle was left running and was reported stolen. They left it running and then reported it stolen. Somebody must have jumped in and just run off with it, right? Or they just left it running and then didn't know what they did with it, like when I lose my keys. And finally, at 9:39 p.m., response to a domestic disturbance, a suspect was arrested for harassment, burglary, and criminal mischief.
Stay connected to what matters most this winter with unlimited high-speed internet from DirectLink. While things may look a little different this year, as we all work together to keep everyone as safe and healthy as possible, you can be confident that DirectLink's reliable network will keep your video calls, Snapchats, stories, and photos crystal clear and at your fingertips whenever you need them. In 2021, DirectLink is thankful for all of their amazing members and is proud to be your local internet, video, and voice provider for over 116 years. All right, joining us again on the Canby Conversation today, we're so excited to welcome back Matt Morrissey. He's the owner and founder. Do you call yourself that? Wayward Sandwiches.
I typically call myself chief bottle washer.
Or, okay, right. Toilet plunger.
Toilet plunger, something along those
he,
lines.
We're here at Wayward Sandwiches. He wants me to believe that he's just surrounded by work. He's got all these papers. He's got his computer. But he forgot to hide his real work, which are these four like half-empty bottles of wine that are also close at hand. So,
you know, I mean, it's a hard job.
Right.
It's
a hey, no judgment, man. We're all into the day drinking at this point, a year into this pandemic. But Wayward Sandwiches, how you guys doing?
We're good, man. We are fortunate to have the space. Directly out to the side of our building here, where we were able to put up Fort Wayward, which is about a 1600 foot tent. So we got a number of tables all distanced and everything else and heaters. And that's really been saving our bacon right now.
Literally.
Yeah, seriously. Our heart goes out to all of the folks that aren't able to have a setup quite like we do. And
yeah.
Because it's, you know, we're running on, it'll be 2 months here pretty quick that people haven't been able, you know, it's just been takeout and takeout's just not the same.
Right.
You don't, you know.
And I think that, thank you for bringing that, because I wanted to ask you, because I do think that people who don't own restaurants or work in restaurants don't understand why the ability to have dine-in is so important. And I mean, can you answer that little bit? Like, why is it so different? It's because that experience is a big part of what you guys sell.
It's on a number of levels.
Yeah.
I mean, first and foremost, it's a good chunk of our staff is dealing
Waste
with
staff.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
dealing with the guests, you know.
Sometimes the guts.
Yeah, probably, yeah, exactly. You know, if you're just doing takeout, then you're laying off a chunk of your staff.
Yeah.
You know, here we're very much, you know, it's a little more counter service and we're driven, you know, we make everything from scratch here. So we're a labor driven place. So that, I mean, we don't lose that much staff when we're only, but we still like a third of the staff or a quarter of the staff, anytime that we're in takeout. Only they're not working, so that's huge. The other pieces, the puzzle, are really, you know, the experience, right? You know, we depending on what kind of atmosphere you're trying to create, we've spent a lot of time and money and effort to create an experience at our various restaurants, so obviously we would prefer that the food comes out as it's intended on a plate, hot and beautiful, and is delivered directly to you, and you get to enjoy it at its best.
Yeah.
The alternative is that it gets put in a box and thank you. So when it's in a box, it's in a box.
Yeah.
You know, if it's hot, it steams. There's no, you know, there's only so much you can do to stop that, and it's just not at its best. If it's good, it's good. You know, and it's not like it makes the food terrible, but it doesn't. It certainly doesn't. So you lose the experience. You know, and you lose the staff, and then you just lose business. I mean, a lot of people are willing to do takeout, but you know, it's just a fact, you know, when you're only doing takeout, and you don't have any inside dining, you know, you're not selling usually the alcohol that goes with it. And for better or for worse, that's a huge profit center for restaurants, you know, and also, it just, people don't, you just don't sell as much food.
Yeah.
You know, if you're, maybe pizza places and fast food and folks like that do the same or better or whatever, but a sit down or a restaurant that's kind of based on an experience like we provide here just doesn't, it's just not the same.
Yeah. Yeah. And you see that difference like real sharply, even in the dollars and cents, even under these conditions where you're outside 50 people, right. Including staff, like really restricted, but you see a big difference
it's a
in
huge
terms
difference.
Of the revenue when
I'm,
it's allowed.
Yeah.
It's
I'm,
not.
Well, I mean, I'm paying my overhead for the indoor,
yeah,
right, rent and utilities and all that stuff,
yeah.
And I'm paying for this massive tent.
Yeah.
Which is like, you know, it's another essentially rent or mortgage payment in its own right. But the difference between me paying all that extra money and having outdoor dining and not having anything is
makes it worth it.
Yeah. I mean, we're not, it's not a windfall. I mean, we're not, you know, but we're able to sustain what we do and we can survive in this mode, but without it at all, it's just hemorrhaging money. And you can't, you know, I mean, the second round of PPP is coming out and so that'll keep a lot of folks afloat for the time being. You know, but, and hopefully we're through the worst of this and hopefully, we're not going backwards anymore.
Yeah.
So, that's the hope. That's the dream.
I wanted to see if the new administration had reached out to you guys about having like a vaccine sandwich and if that would be a way to get this out to people so we can get back to normal.
We had been consulted and that's why we created the Lambdemic and the lockdown bacon burger.
You shoot up the lamb with a bunch of vaccine.
We were consulted by the powers that be. And so, but nobody's reached out to us about a vaccine. So that would make sense for us to make a vaccine pun at this point.
I get the sense from you, Matt, obviously as a business owner, I mean, the dollars and cents is huge, but I feel that even just the a sense of anguish from you about not being able to deliver that product when you're talking about takeout. You guys spent months developing this concept, you know, before the pandemic, in hindsight, not that much before, but I mean, you spent months like, this is the kind of restaurant we want to have and the kind of experience, and then to be forced to do something less than that, that's got to be hard for the kind of passion you guys have.
I mean, it is. It's definitely, I mean, this year has just been all about learning to pivot and roll with the punches. And so, I mean, we obviously, it's not ideal. If in a perfect world, you know, we would be able to do all the things that we want to do inside with a normal setup you learn more about yourself and what you're capable of with adversity with the tent we're able to put food on plates, so we're not, it's not, you know, it's when there's nothing that's really rough. We're confident that we're rounding the bend here. It seems like the vaccine's really starting to get out there. And
one thing that you have been able to keep somewhat consistent with all the crazy changes is that ultimately, whether it's on a plate or in a box, whether it's steamy or not, somewhat less steamy, you still have the food, right? Do a lot of what you would do in terms of food. So let's talk a little bit about that. Let's move away from current events and talk about what you guys do here at Wayward Sandwiches. So if you could just kind of describe your philosophy with the type of food that you create.
I mean, the food starts with Chef Justin. Justin Rouse. And so...
literally like he grows some of his own herbs and stuff like from the seed.
You know, a lot of the peppers and things like that. The fundamental philosophy for us is to source as locally as we can and source the best food that we can locally. And so that's not always, you know, I can't just buy the most expensive everything, because at the end of the day, like, you know, we're this isn't a fine dining. You know, we use a lot of the same concepts and a lot of the same techniques and things like that you would use in fine dining, but like, you know, it's a sandwich shop. And so we have to balance those things, but we are able to use some amazing local farmers and ranchers and artisans food to put together what we do. And we think that by keeping the circle small, you know, the where our money is spent, so to speak, is good for this community. And we really try and we'll continue to try to highlight some of the amazing people in this community that help us with our food. Yeah. You know, and certainly that TMK. Starts with, you know, folks like Todd and Tessa at TMK and Mark at TMK. They're amazing people. They put out amazing product. You know, we're working with them at this point. We use a ton of their cheese.
Yeah.
But they have a beef operation down in Klamath Falls, separate from the dairy here in Canby. And we're going to try and, you know, we're finding ways to work with them using that stuff, too. And that's a project that we're working on in the future.
Yeah.
And then we've got, you know, the Grano in Oregon City, the bakers that we use for the most of our bread. And then, you know, we use White Rabbit Bakery in Aurora does our gluten-free bread. Yeah. And then Chessa over at Baker's Prairie, they do the cream pies that we sell and people love. And, you know, and then the farmers that are around here, we've got several folks within the 5-10 mile radius that grow incredible, you know, products. We get we work with some folks out in Sherwood that have been great. We just found them out. It's a called Our Table, it's a little cooperative, and they have all manner, especially in, you know, in the growing season, all manner of stuff that we get from them. And then there's folks, our friends over at Your Kitchen Garden, who have actually just recently retired, but there's a couple other new folks, and I believe it's Canby Farm and Kitchen is a new business that is cropping up there, and that's just out on the Canby Markham Highway and Hines Road. But they make, you know, all our Brussels sprouts come from them, and you know, and there's a ton of different folks out here, and we you know, so we take those ingredients that's the basic raw ingredients, and then Chef Justin puts his you know, creativity and skill to it, and we come up with tasty things.
Yeah.
You know, we don't ever want to be accused of having bland or boring food.
Yeah. I wanted to hear your thoughts. I think a lot of people are familiar with the kind of environmental benefits and behind the buy local and shop local and farm, you know, local farm, eat local movement. But I imagine there's some quality things that come with that as well that you probably see in terms of the freshness and maybe other things as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, you can't replace, you know, a product that is coming to you with minimal processing, right? Mm. So a lot of food that you get at a grocery store that's fresh and it's fine and there's no, you know, but it's when it's coming from, you have to think about any crop, right? Like, so let's say tomatoes.
Yeah.
For us to have tomatoes year round that we buy at the grocery store, there needs to be a constant churn of areas that massive farms that are providing those products that come available, because obviously, you know, things like tomatoes don't grow in a day, you know what I mean? It takes time. So, you know, part of the year it comes from parts of California, and then it comes from parts of Mexico, and then it comes from, you know, and all these different places that sort of come online with their products and bring it in at any given time of the year.
Right.
Well, you know, in order to do that and keep that supply chain going, you know, inevitably there is, there's a method, you know, sometimes it's chemicals to ripen things. Sometimes it's, you know, just the travel and, the wear and tear on things. And, and so they pick crops that are, or I should say, you know, variations of the tomatoes and things like that, that are going to travel the best, that are going to, and, what's sacrificed ultimately in all of that is typically the flavor.
Yeah.
So you want all these other attributes that gets it looking good. So you can, you know, it's attractive and it travels and all those things, but like it doesn't taste as good as something that you plant locally.
Yeah.
So if I'm going, if I have a farmer dropping off, tasty, you know, I mean, just delicious farm fresh that maybe wouldn't travel as well, or but it doesn't have to. It's just coming to me from my neighbor, you know.
Yeah, and not I'm going not, across the
and
world.
I'm not paying any of the middlemen.
Yeah.
We're helping pay a living wage to folks who want to do what they do. Yeah. They want to farm, you know. They don't want to. They're not. They want people to enjoy their products. But at the end of the day, if they can, if they don't have to take less money dealing with the distributor or whatever, or they're able to balance some of that with, you know, selling to folks like me or farmers markets, and they can get more of the money, then we're all for it.
Yeah.
I'd rather give my money to somebody who's doing their thing and you know, putting the blood, sweat, and tears into their land than pay a big company that has. And that's not to say that we don't use the big companies too, because we can't source everything all the time here.
Right.
So it's this, you know, it's kind of a circle of life, and you know, we're fortunate to be here in the United States, where we're able to cobble this together and have everything at our fingertips. But when we can, we always like to spread it locally for sure. Better products, and more heart and soul in them.
Yeah. Love it. We were talking about your executive chef, Justin.
Yeah.
There was one word that I think he used a couple times, but it stood out to me, was creativity.
Yeah.
And I think that does come through a lot in your menu, and anyone who's eating here
and
tried things.
Yeah.
But tell me a little bit more about that. There's some things that are just like, where did he even come up with that? And then there's some things that are like, oh, that's a Cuban, but it's totally different than any Cuban I've ever seen before.
You know, the thing you got to remember, you know, about Justin is you know, and what we're trying to do here is that we never take the easy way
out. Yeah.
You know, it's never, we're never trying to do something just because it's faster, it's easier, it's whatever. And, you know, and so when, you know, and Justin, first of all, he's just an incredibly creative chef. And he sees, you know, like any great chef, he sees combinations and flavors in a way that, you know, he makes work and he makes it seem easy. He creates flavors that we're just incapable of, you know, doing ourselves, right? Part of the fun of eating out, to me anyway, is going and having experience and eating something that I can't do at home.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm a pretty decent,
for me, because I can't even cook cereal, but I hear you on that.
I mean, I'm a decent home cook, but I certainly cannot recreate Justin's food.
Right. Or just trying something new is fine. Yeah, something you never heard of or never tried
before. And that's been one of the really fun parts of this journey so far, has been that people at this point, I think, have just really started to trust, you know, and maybe that the food's going to be good. And so maybe they wouldn't have eaten Brussels sprouts before, or they have a bad impression of this or that. You know, we have a lot of people who are like, you know, I wouldn't normally try anything like this, but because Justin's doing it, it's, you know, it's you guys and it's Justin, I'm going to give it a shot.
Mm.
And so being able to broaden people's horizons, and also, you know, part of the fun of it too, is just you get so many people who are like, wow, I've never had anything like that.
Yeah.
And you know, that's the best I've ever had of that ever. And
yeah,
it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's really rewarding. And he's, we're hoping to be able to do collaborate and keep putting out good stuff for a long time to come.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk a lot more about the food. We're going to take a quick break and then come back and hear more from Chef Matt. We'll be right back.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with three realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. the first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate and we got in a carriage ride with the horse and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life. Mm-hmm.
How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
How do you set it, like, what, I mean, I'm not super picky, I like to try new things, but they're also, like, I'm pretty, especially at this point, 32, 33, I forget how old I am, but, you kind of know there's some, the things you like, right?
Sure.
And everybody's like that, you know, and often it's different. How do you kind of fight that when you're setting a menu and trying to have as broad appeal to where you can definitely have, you know, people that just love a chicken sandwich. You can have the best, you know, possible chicken sandwich for those people, but also try and hit different things. Because there are some people that are not going to be adventurous, right? When they're
no, and so we try, you know, we try and that was the we were certainly thoughtful with regard to the menu, and we wanted things to be both familiar and unfamiliar.
Yeah.
You know, we wanted reference points for people. You know, we wanted things on the menu. We wanted ultimately most of the menu to be somewhat familiar.
Yeah.
But we also wanted to build in components or, you know, or put our spin on components that you know maybe they hadn't thought of. You know, so many people. You think of whatever it is, you know, ranch dressing or barbecue sauce or anything, and you just have in your mind what the flavor profile is. And so, like, the most variation on that is, you know, maybe it's and so what we try to do is we try to take that, and there's the at the heart of it, it is what you think it is, right?
Yeah.
It's ranch.
Yeah, right.
But we just take it out for a spin.
Yeah.
And put our stamp on it.
Yeah.
And you know, you're not a, you know, sometimes people don't respond well to that, and that's okay. But
yeah.
We, you know, the one thing that we try and most people acknowledge is that it's not, that maybe they don't like it, and maybe it's different than what they're familiar with, but they don't think of it as not well made or not a quality ingredient. It's just maybe not their cup of tea. And so we've built the menu so that there's something for everyone.
Yeah.
So if you really just like plain Jane, meat and potatoes, or you know, you want
peanut butter and jelly on there,
right,
yeah,
right. You know what I mean? Or you at the end of the day, you don't want our turkey sandwich. You know that with all the dressing that we have on there, you can get what you're looking for. You know what I mean? You can get something basic that is not going to be crazy and it's not going to be, but it is still going to be well made.
Yeah.
And so that's really, but we've got the basics covered at this point. So, you know, the specials board and everything else tends to be at this point. We've been able to kind of play with things that we weren't sure would work here.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, certainly, you know, things like lamb and duck and people are going crazy for it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it gives us kind of license to just keep tinkering.
Yeah.
And, so yeah, that's, which is awesome.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't get stale.
Yeah. Well, in our last few minutes we have here, I'd love to maybe discuss a couple of specific dishes or two.
Sure.
Is there, Is there anything that you know that you can talk about?
Yeah,
that's sort of a signature or something. Yeah, that I think
the Reuben is certainly the most polarizing of the.
well, let's start with something polarizing.
Yeah. Man. Well, I mean, at the end of the day,
it's the season.
It's still just food, but yeah. Polarizing in the sense that the way we do our, so we make all the meats in house, we make all the sauces in house, and the way we do our pastrami, it is so tender that when we go to heat up the pastrami, we like to crisp it up on the flat top before we put it on the sandwich. It just falls apart.
Yeah.
So we quickly learned that we had to, in order to deal with that, we needed to thick cut the pastrami, which is sort of anathema to a normal Reuben. It's usually thinly sliced and piled high and all that. And we start there, and the pastrami we make, it sits in brine for about 10 days. And then it gets rubbed down with coriander and black pepper, and then it gets smoked, and then once it hits a certain temperature, we take it out and we steam it overnight in the oven at really low temperature, and then it cools down before we slice it, and it's just, it's like, it's really decadent. But it is not your average pastrami. And so we then use the Grano rye bread, and they have a light seeded rye, and we make our own Thousand Island that we call Lost Sauce, which is, you know, is probably a little tangier than your average. And we use this cheese called Emmentaler, which is a lot of the Swiss cheese that folks use for the Reubens is domestically made, and it gets almost like a waxy look on it when it's been out. And this stuff is from France, and it's just a little bit like creamier and nuttier, and it gets really nice and melty. And so the final ingredient, most important, depending on how you look at it, is the sauerkraut. And so a lot of most Reubens that you deal with, the sauerkraut is this sort of canned or jarred, and it's the texture is, it's not necessarily like slimy, but it's not, you know, there isn't a lot of crunch or like texture to it. And
it's a vehicle for salt.
Yeah. And so we do our own sauerkraut in house, and there's just four ingredients. It's cabbage and salt and caraway and juniper berries, and that's it. So we shred it all up, and then we mix it up, and then we ferment it for a couple weeks and you get a nice sour taste, but you get this crunch, and it's like it tastes like it's fresh, and you can taste that it's got the sour still. You
taste the juniper.
You can taste all of it. And this sandwich that, you know, the Reuben is hot mess. But it's got all these exploding flavors, and we think it's amazing.
Yeah.
But there's definitely a contingent of people in the world who want
a more classic
Reuben. Gotcha. And so we call those folks the Reuben police. And you know, we
do you have to set when somebody orders a Reuben,
like if people call us over and which happens from time to time, you know, we don't get a lot of food sent back here. I mean, we screw up like everyone else. We're not perfect, and anytime we screw up, we try and own it, and we try and resolve the problem before people ever walk through the door and get them something or whatever it is. But every once in a while we get somebody who is just, you know, sometimes upset, like mad that we have that what we have done to the Reuben is somehow sacrilegious. And you know, for every one of those people, there's five more who say it's the best Reuben they ever had in their life. But it's an interesting phenomenon, and it's certainly you know, the number one seller. We ran recently the numbers from 2020.
That's funny. Just before we go, because it's not even different. It's not like you put ham in it or, you know, no. It's the same stuff. It's just a little bit different take and higher quality takes on the same ingredients.
It's mostly the way we cut the pastrami. But
it's not like you put like a hot dog in there or, something crazy. Anyway, but you said looking at the numbers.
Yeah. Well, so the number one, our best selling item is the burger. And, number two is the Reuben for sure.
Cool.
And I would say, you know, another probably on the cold side of the menu, my favorite is our club.
Okay.
And our club wasn't actually on, the Wayward Club wasn't on the original menu. We had a hero that had a lot of the same ingredients, but we just couldn't get it to do consistently the way we wanted it to.
Yeah.
So we switched to the club, and it is it's just super good. Nice.
What kind of bread on that?
So that's our sourdough.
Okay.
But it's a mild sourdough that Grano makes, and all that their bread is whole wheat. They don't use a lot of bleached white flour. So, but it's not like, you know, chunky multigrain or anything like that. But so the light sourdough, wheat sourdough, and we do the triple decker. If anyone wants to ask Chef Justin how he feels about clubs, and you'd be prepared for a 30-minute dissertation. but has to have three slices of bread.
Yeah.
Has to have ham and turkey.
Yeah, it's obviously. Like Barfield making a sandwich is like that.
Has to have the bacon. And then it has to be cut into triangles. If you don't cut it into triangles, it's not a club.
Okay, agree. I'm on board. Yeah.
These are all very important pieces of the puzzle.
Yeah.
So the
four ways, right?
Yeah. Triangles.
Yeah.
Exactly. It can't be squares. It has to be triangles.
Yeah.
If you
cut it in a square, you're you're just a monster. Like, we can't even. Yeah. I call the police right now.
It's pretty much the way it goes. The turkey we make in house is one of the only meats that isn't get smoked here.
Okay.
And then the ham, on the other hand, it gets completely done in the smoker. So you get that nice smoky ham with the turkey, and then we do kind of a secret sauce on it, on one layer of it that is harissa. Mm. And harissa is this really awesome, it's a condiment in, like, so if you went to a cafe in Morocco, right, and you ordered lunch, instead of having the bottle of ketchup like you would get here, you would have a jar of harissa.
Interesting.
And so harissa is it's made with red peppers and oil and usually like kind of Moroccan spices, so like cumin, coriander, things like that. And so it's not always, it can be varying degrees of spicy. And for this sandwich, we incorporate some Calabrian chilies, which are these Italian chilies that come, they're imported, they come in oil, and they've got this really wonderful spice to them and flavor. And so we mix all of that together and we get this harissa sauce that we hit on the just one side. So it doesn't make the sandwich too spicy. It doesn't, you know, it's not like gonna kill anyone, but it just adds this layer of flavor that is.
Yeah.
And so we do that in the meat, and we use really nice provolone from Italy. And then our mayo, which is a freshly made aioli, we use a little citrus juice in there. But that's on the other ones. And then the top portion with the bacon, we do lettuce and a little bit of onion, and we mix it with a little bit of oil and vinegar and salt and pepper, almost like an Italian sandwich, or Italian sub, or if you've ever been to Mike's Subs or something, you know, like there's like the Mike's Way. It's almost kind of similar, you know, so that adds a little bit of another layer of acidity and flavor. And that goes on the top, and it's spectacular. It really sings.
Yeah. Wow. You're making me hungry. I got to stop asking you questions. With you guys, when you look at your numbers, I imagine the hot sandwiches went out pretty well. Oh, is that true?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But like I said, the club's the third most popular sandwich. So like, okay. And you know, I mean, certainly the turkey, but if you're looking at like a mix, we've got what, 10, 11.
Right. You have a lot more options.
There's 11 on the hot side and there's only 5 on the cold side. And that, you know, obviously that reflects the popularity.
Yeah.
We still serve a lot of cold stuff. And then this, you know, the sides, a lot of the things that we do, the cheese curds, yeah, and the wings, the sweet potato JoJo's, there's a lot there. You know, there's nothing on the menu that doesn't get a lot of action. If I look up there today, there's not anything that I would say, you know, I mean, thinking about taking that off.
Yeah.
Which is a good sign.
Yeah. Cool. Well, Matt, it has been great. Don't put magnets on my recording. Lose this entire interview. My son's trying to put magnets. It has been great to talk to you.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks so much for taking time out and hang in there.
Yeah,
and,
we will.
You know, get back
to me. We'll see the other side of this.
But get back to me when you're ready to develop that vaccine sandwich. Yeah,
the vaccine sandwich is obviously in the works.
All right. Take care.
Thank you.
Hey, Frankie, you okay? You seem kind of down.
Yeah, I'm just bummed. I miss going to the Wild Hair. I know you can still get takeout and all, but it's just not the same.
You know they're open again, right?
What?
Yeah, they've been open for a while now. Don't you cover, like, the news?
Hey, I'm only human, okay?
Okay. Well, I can tell you that the Wild Hare and their amazing staff are thrilled to be open again for delicious meals and fun times. They are strictly following all the recommended safety guidelines, and they have the only covered outdoor patio in Canby, with lots of tables spaced 6 feet apart and umbrellas also spaced 6 feet apart, and fantastic ambiance. And hey, if you're still more comfortable with carryout, they can hook you up there too. Find their menu and other information online at thewildhairsaloon.net or check them out in Canby and Oregon City. Anything to add, Frankie? Frankie? Oh, I guess he left. God, he must have been really hungry. Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.